At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And that's saying something from a man who is not prone to hyperbole. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, to talk about the politics of this. How you doing, Andy? Andy?
I'm doing well, but I like your last line.
Well, I don't understand. What?
From a man not prone to a hyperbole.
Oh, is he? I didn't know. Let's talk about the politics of this, because the Democrats, the first thing I thought of was this. Democrats are jumping up, and Hakeem Jeffries and some Republicans, Rand Paul, if he's an independent, whatever he is these days, I don't know, are saying that this is going to be a killer, that he can't do this, they could try to stop him. I say, politically, if I'm the Democrats, or if I'm not a fan of President Trump, let him do what he wants. Let him stand or fall on his own merits, because, as he says, he has a mandate and the people voted for this and that's what they want. So if he indeed is going to make America great again, I have a soundbite where he says he's going to make America wealthy again. Give him a chance. If it doesn't work, it's on him. If it does work, then happy days are here again. Thoughts?
H.L. Mencken had a great quote that democracy is a system of government in which the common man knows what he wants and deserves to get it, good and hard.
Yep, there you go.
You're right. There's going to be political consequences. There's going to be economic consequences, and one follows from the other. The economic consequences are that things are going to be more expensive, and your 401k is going to be worth less, at least for the short term. Now, the long term for what might happen because of this, it's hard to say. We haven't been in this situation for ages, but the last time we did large increases in tariffs, it was in the midst of the Depression, and it didn't end well. But in the short term, 2 years or a year and a half now, I think this is going to hurt Republicans, because the stock market is, as you see, dropped fairly significantly yesterday, might recover a little bit today, but it's not going to go up that much anytime soon, and the price of goods are going to go up. So I think Republicans will probably end up losing seats, probably potentially both the House and the Senate in the 2026 midterms. And then, we'll see things move around.
I've been candid about this on the air. I don't know if I said it to you or not, but my financial guy told me back in November, December, get out the market. Who knows if tariffs are going to crater the economy or not. So I pulled a bunch of money out, and I have enough in secure vessels so that I can pay my house off if I need to. So I can watch this somewhat detached because I took his advice. And we're going to talk to a professor of economics later on about the economic aspects of this. When it comes to the political part of it, people are talking about, and I know this would be in your wheelhouse as part of history, going back to Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act and the golden days of America. And I think what people might be conflating is that it's a different world economy today than it was then. And the world's different than it was then.
Yeah, it is different. But the trade system that we currently have in place, or we did until yesterday, really started post-World War II, when the United States was the only economic power left in the world. Everybody else was pretty much destroyed. Their economies were destroyed by the war. So we could do what we wanted for a lot of years there. Good in the 1950s, 1960s, even to the 1970s, we were by far the biggest economy, and we really didn't have competition. That competition started, what did we start doing? We started putting in tariffs on steel, on automobiles and so forth, because we use tariffs as a political tool. They're not a fundraising tool per se. They're a political tool.
They were originally, right? A fundraising tool?
Well, yeah, they were, because we didn't have an income tax. Income tax was not legal.
Right.
But the biggest problem, and you and I have talked about this, it goes back to Congress abdicating their responsibilities. Congress has the power under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution to regulate the collection of duties and imports and tariffs and so forth. But there's a law passed in 1934, the Reciprocal Trade Agreement, which basically the logic was, well, the president needs to move more quickly on tariffs, so we'll let him go on a state-by-state basis, country-by-country basis, and raise or lower tariffs. That got expanded twice to the point where Congress really doesn't have much control over tariffs anymore because they gave it up. And now they're going to be pointing the finger, both Republicans and Democrats, Democrats definitely, at Trump, saying the tariffs are a bad thing. Why are you doing this? Well, Congress had the power to stop them all along, but they've given that up, like they've given up a lot of their powers.
So when it comes to the president saying that there's going to be a little bit of pain before reward, how does the voter view that? And how much pain are they willing to put up with? And how would they view a reward, regardless of how a man who is not prone to hyperbole spends it?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to think of the time horizon. In 2 years, in the 26 midterms, Republicans were not likely to do well anyway. The president's party almost always loses seats in the midterm elections, and both House and the Senate are so close, it's such that Republicans would likely lose control if one, if not both of those. This is going to amplify Democrats to prove to them. Democrats can use this to prove to them that they were right and Trump was wrong, and they need to have some the clawback power in Washington. I think that you're going to see, if the prices go up, inflation goes up because of this, that Republicans are going to be disappointed and not going to show up as much like they did in 2018, or like they didn't do in 2018. So these cycles are there, and I think that politically, in the short term, this is definitely going to hurt Republicans. But in the long term, this is part of a bigger shift. So the Republican Party used to be the party of business, the party of the economic elites. It's not anymore. It's the blue-collar party. You notice that one of the Democrats that isn't complaining about this are senators and congressmen from Michigan. Mm-hmm. They like this because it's protection of industries like the automobile industry in Michigan. And you see the UAW president now suddenly kind of friendly to Trump after being very antagonistic towards him during the 2024 election campaign. So follow the money, see who gets helped. We're having a major shift in the alignment of the political parties. It's been happening over quite some time, but this is only going to further solidify that as the Republican Party no longer really being the party of business, I think.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk about Mike Johnson having his rear end handed to him on proxy voting, what all of that means. 621 traffic now, WWL. President Trump yesterday, as he announced Liberation Day and tariffs, somebody texted in again and again and again. Why is it okay for other countries to place tariffs on American goods, but not okay for America to reciprocate? That is a question for Peter Ricchiuti, the professor of finance at Tulane, and will join us at 7:15. Right now, we're talking to Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Yeah, I'm going too fast here, Andy. Tell me about what's going on with Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House from Louisiana, and proxy voting.
Well, this, I think, starts with the showing how close the House of Representatives is divided, equally pretty much between Republicans and Democrats. Johnson can't afford to lose any votes. Proxy voting is something that's fairly popular among both, certainly Democrats, but partially Republicans.
What is it, Andy, proxy voting?
It's to allow people to vote by proxy because they can't make it to the chamber themselves. Mm-hmm. So I can give my vote to you and say, here, go deliver my vote to the Speaker of the House, the head of the House there, so you don't have to be there. And it's pushed by two women who say it's not fair for women after they've had a baby to have to be in the House to vote on these things. It kind of keeps them from being able to participate. That got support by Anna Paulino.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Luna, who's a Republican from Florida, and so there were enough votes for that to go through to be discharged. That's what's called a discharge petition, so you can have a vote on the floor for it. Johnson didn't want that because he can't afford to lose a vote here or there. He wants to know exactly who's in that room when there's voting going on.
So it comes down to face-to-face, right, Andy? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. You have to be in the room to vote. You have to be able to say aye or nay if somebody calls your name. What happened
but,
then?
But I'm saying, let me just jump in 1 second. That's what Mike Johnson want. Mike Johnson's saying, no, you're going to vote against me. You're going to stand here and do it in front of me, basically?
Well, it's going to... It just requires any vote that goes in the House of Senate, the House right now, to be in person.
Right.
This would allow you to not have to be there in person, not just this particular vote, but any vote.
Gotcha.
But the thing that's interesting is that Johnson tried to stop this. The Speaker of the House really has enormous powers, and one of them is that he can use kind of special rules to prevent issues from coming to the floor of the House. He can keep them aside, essentially. Well, that's where he lost the vote, because there were 9 Republicans that went along to prevent this from happening, because they said, you know what, they've got the votes. They've got the votes for the discharge petition. This should go to the House, and House floor, and we should vote on it. And that's why Johnson basically stopped everything from happening, because he doesn't want this to go forward. It's kind of a delay technique, a stalling tactic to try to prevent this from happening in the future. So he's going to twist some arms here over the next few days to try to get the people to pull back on this, or try to make some sort of a deal. But it's certainly not something that helps his power within as a speaker. But I think all of it is a result of the House so evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats that the Republicans can't afford to lose a vote.
Have you ever heard of stick voting in Louisiana, Andy?
No, I have not heard of stick voting.
It's kind of like proxy voting, what they used to do, and I don't think it's legal anymore, but one legislator, when the other one wasn't there, would have a stick and lean over and press the other one's button to vote for him. I swear to God that's true.
I like that.
Yeah, stick voting. Well, thank you, Andy.
Who'd have thought that would happen in Louisiana?
Crazy stuff, huh? Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. We'll take a break, talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, when we come back. Time now, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Hot, humid, windy. Could be that way through the weekend, and then a cool front comes through. Chance for showers Saturday, and really more so Sunday, and then it cools off a little bit. Mike Strain joins us now. Our friend, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, Dr. Mike Strain, a very skilled and beloved veterinarian. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I'm doing excellent. How are you, Tommy?
I am okay. Teddy and I had a little moment yesterday. Teddy, the mutt, because we were playing,
uh-huh.
And all of a
lucky
sudden...
Lucky Teddy.
Yeah, all of a sudden he decided that it was time to just stop and take a leak in the middle of the living room, and of course we had to have a discussion about that. I don't know what went through mind or through his – well, I do know what went through his bladder. I don't know what went through his mind, but I think we're on the right page now. How's Hootie?
Man, Hootie is doing great. Hootie's always trying to help me in the mornings. You know, Hootie loves when I get on the radio because, you know, she wants to participate, and so she's having a wonderful time out here on the farm. I tell you what. You know, when we come back in the next life, we need to be our pets, right?
You got that
Teddy
right.
And Hootie.
Teddy's got it. Man, I'm going to tell you what, he does. And I think that dog, I saw a lab yesterday. Not that this is important, but Mike, do Labradors have a tail that curls up? Is that common for Labrador retrievers, a big, thick tail that curls up?
some do. Some have, but most common they lay flat, but sometimes they do. And a lot of times you can look at different lineages of animals and they will have similar characteristics. You know, it's just like, you know, some blue heelers look a certain way and, you know, some Catahoula curs, you know, there's some that the tail goes down. We call them hooky tails, mm-hmm. You know, so. Yeah, each species is just a little bit different.
All right, let's talk about
Labradors. They're out there, you know, they're looking, they got their tail up, they're out there, they're looking to see something, looking to find something, looking to retrieve something. They're looking.
And what about the pointing thing? When dogs do that, they raise that little hand, the little arm and point. Yeah, is that specific to any breed?
Yes, it's more specific, you know, to bird dogs, to hunt dogs, and that's been instilled into their genes for generations. You know, my dad used to raise pointers, and we hunted quail and woodcock here on the North Shore, and it's just amazing. You didn't have to train them to do it. It was inherent in them. Now, you had to train them to hunt because they would try to, you know, jump in the middle of the birds until you got them trained, but they would point, and then after you would shoot the birds, they would go find them and bring them back to you. You know, it's amazing how brilliant these animals are, but what's inherent in their very natures.
Let's talk about tariffs, Mike. Your thoughts on what that could mean for, I'm not talking about the politics, but I'm talking about the actual effects of on farmers, Louisiana farmers, prices of goods, et cetera.
Well, we will know, you know, shortly. You know, this is going into effect all by April the 5th. We're going to see higher prices for many things, but mainly for the goods for American farmers, it's really going to affect our export markets. And so if you saw, you know, yesterday, initially at the close of business, most of the different stocks and commodities were flat or went up. Now, that being said, overnight, the Dow futures has dropped by 1,000 points. So everything's going to be a rough morning this morning. And I know we are working to see what the net effect's going to be on the value of our commodities. We went through this in 2019. But on the other side is the world desperately needs our commodities because across the board, the world is consuming more commodities than we're producing. So that helps us there. But it is going to have some effects. It will be crop by crop, country by country, depending on where our major markets are. And what we have to look out for, the direct tariffs for us is the other part is the retaliatory tariffs in the other countries. And they will be crop specific, depending on the main avenue the way we send our products. The other thing we're trying to do is find more uses for our own commodities here in the United States where we add value to those commodities. For instance, the majority of our corn doesn't leave our shores. It goes into feeding livestock and poultry here. Now, more than half of our soybeans eventually leave our shores, and we're working to see how we can use more here and then send the final products overseas. But for initially, everything that causes instability, generally, you know, it's a challenge. And I've been talking to my different distributors and all of our exporters, and we're going to have to deal with it, you know, in live time. And, but, you know, once these things level out, then things are okay. But in the short term, it causes some instability.
Tell me about egg prices. The president mentioned something about egg prices yesterday during his speech. I didn't write down the price, and I don't have the soundbite in front of me. But he was saying that egg prices are way down. I don't know. I don't eat eggs.
They are way down. They are way down. If you look at the market report that came out on the 21st, it came out, the average wholesale price across the United States of white large shell eggs went down another 89 cents to $3.27 per dozen. Here in this particular region right now, they are in and around that $3 to $3.49 a dozen. You can find some pretty good deals. So the bottom line, eggs are coming down. Several things. We've increased production. We've gotten more in the warehouses. But when it got so high, people quit buying them. There was demand destruction. So that's good news. You can find eggs in and around $3 a dozen in some of the different stores. And so that is good. And also they loosened the rules on this cage-free so that, again, we could get more eggs produced. And we have not seen a big surge in the avian influenza. For right now, it's slowed down, which is a good thing so that we can kind of rebuild our flocks.
Mike, what's, I don't know, again, I don't eat eggs, not that I have anything against them, I just for whatever reason don't eat them. Tell me about, like, what's a normal price for eggs, or I don't know what a normal price is for a dozen, considering there's no avian flu and everything else.
We get really used to buying eggs at $1.89, $1.99, you know, and you can remember seeing eggs as a loss leader in grocery stores, $1.29. Okay. And so, you know, by and large, if you go back and look at, you know, egg prices a year ago, they were under that $3. And so as we get closer to that $2.25, $2.50, it's more comfortable for us. But getting down to $3 has been a big deal. They're still, you know, on the high side, but it's much, much better. We'd like to see them get in and around that $2.25 a dozen.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Mike Strain. We've got to talk about crawfish prices. We also have to talk about the upcoming legislative session, 6:51. 9 till 9. You got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text line. Now we pause for traffic on WWL. 6:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Thursday morning. That's time to talk to Mike Strain, Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, when it comes to legislative session, what are some of the things that you'll be looking for?
Well, right now we are reading the bills as they are being filed. We're working. We have some department bills. One is something we've worked on actually for a couple of years. That's going to be with Senator Alain and others. And it's where we're going to be able to use gypsum that is produced as a byproduct at our manufacturing plants and use that as a sulfur fertilizer. Where we're at now, a lot of the lands are becoming depleted in sulfur because we no longer have sulfur that is emitted into the air from burning fossil fuels. And what's happened is that as a result, since we haven't done that in over 20 years, a lot of the soils that had the sulfur, that sulfur is being depleted because it was deposited there, since the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. So we are doing that because a lot of the soils have to have 300 to 600 pounds of sulfur per acre every 5 years. So that is going to be one of our bills. The other bills we're working on with our Representative Guyman and others, there's going to be a lot of policy that is put in place for solar power, and that's we're going to be working intensely on that. And those bills are being filed. We're also going to be working with Senator Fezzi and others on seafood legislation. And the Lieutenant Governor and I were together yesterday in the office trying to streamline all of these rules and regulations for the seafood industry. And so we expect that. So it's going to be a busy session. It's going to be a very short session. But also, though, as you saw yesterday, the governor's executive order with hiring freezes. And as a result of the constitutional amendments not passing, now they've got to reexamine the budget from top to bottom. So all that starts over, and we're trying to see where all that's going to end up. But we're under a hiring freeze effective April the 11th, and it's very stringent. And so it's going to be a very busy session, but they're going to have to get their fiscal house in order. And, of course, whenever that's going on, we pay very close attention to make sure there's no negative impacts to agriculture during that process.
Let's talk about crawfish prices and availability and all that, Mike.
Yes, crawfish prices are good. You see them advertised this morning. You know, you can go to Rouse's at $3.25 a pound. I see them anywhere from $3.25 to $3.99 a pound. A lot of availability, and they are really, really good. Mm-hmm. So now is the time. You can find strawberries, for around $4.99 to $5.99 a pound, Louisiana strawberries. And we got Strawberry Festival coming up, and that's April 11th, 12th, and 13th. So we need to be ready. It's going to be high times there in Ponchatoula.
Mike, real quick, if I'm going to sit you down with crawfish, how many pounds can you eat?
Well, I try to stay under 5, but you know how that is.
No,
3 to 5 pounds, and I can tear them up pretty hard. But I like to eat those sweet potatoes along with it. A little corn on the cob, a little bit of sausage, mushrooms.
That's where
we
got
to do the whole deal.
I'm about 5 pounds. That's where I do you eat the black thing or not?
What's that? Oh, if I do 5 pounds, I got to get up and walk around before I sit back
Thank
down
you,
and do
Mike.
Some more.